with the 21st pick in the 2014 NFL Draft, the Green Bay Packers select Taha Clinton-Dix.
It's time for the Packers War Room Podcast.
Made me a believer into really thinking that the Packers really could run the table, and that was when I said right away, they're winning the NFC North.
The bond between us was just a moment that I'll never forget. For him to be able to get behind the corner and really just catch the prayer, essentially, was just quintessential Packers 2016.
Like I said, for this team to win two playoff games was just astounding with how beat up they were and the state of their defense, really.
And now, alongside Jacob Westendorf and Cody Bauer, here's your host of the Packers War Room Podcast, Ross Uglum.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the penultimate episode of the Packers War Room Offseason Podcast. I am your host, Ross Uglum of Cheesehead TV, and joining me, as always, is Jacob Westendorf. Jacob, how's it going tonight?
Good. Coming down to the end here tomorrow as we record on a Wednesday night. That means tomorrow is 1 week from the day, so all that work comes to fruition.
And joining us after a brief one-show absence is Cody Bauer. Cody, how's it hanging?
It's hanging pretty good. I'm excited to rip off some good DB talk tonight. Obviously, huge position for the Packers to be addressed in this offseason.
Absolutely, and speaking of defensive backs and addressing that position, the Packers re-signed cornerback Devon House, addressing their cornerback situation. We can kind of talk about the validity of that, but at least at this point, they have two veteran corners in Tremon Williams and Devon House that they feel like they can trust maybe a little bit more than you feel like you could trust an undrafted free agent or even a mid-round pick in this upcoming draft, so that they have to feel pretty decent about at least their cornerback depth, if not maybe their cornerback starters. Charles Robinson and Mike Florio kind of started a hubbub about Packers quarterback Aaron Rodgers and his feelings towards the release of Jordy Nelson and towards not re-signing of his quarterback coach Alex Van Pelt as well. Rodgers was basically immediately was immediately made available for media access and pretty much put that all to bed and really put it to bed by throwing shade on Twitter at both guys and basically calling them hashtag fake news. What wasn't fake news, though, was the unbelievable amount of snow that the greater Green Bay area got. I'll be making my annual trek to eastern Wisconsin for the draft, and that is normally accompanied by golf at Thornberry Creek, the official golf course of the Green Bay Packers. I have talked to the general manager that will not be happening because of the unbelievable amounts of snow that has fallen on the city of Green Bay, Wisconsin, here in the middle of April in the year of our Lord 2018. And players had trouble getting in to minicamp. Jimmy Graham had trouble. Aaron Rodgers reportedly had to fly into St. Louis and drive to Green Bay. It was just absolutely wild. But minicamp has gotten started, and I think one of the favorite quotes of a lot of Packers fans was Jimmy Graham saying that he gave up a lot of money to come to Green Bay, and he feels like it's a hungry organization. He is hungry to get a Super Bowl, and when asked if he can still make an impact, he responded by saying, "Still 6'7", and I still run a 4'5". So that's pretty cool, but that'll do it for the news. Very exciting interview that we're going to play for you here. I had a chance to talk to Ian Wharton, kind of a defensive back expert. He produces the Cornerbook Handbook, which is now available online and is a really, really cool tool for those of you trying to learn a little bit more about cornerback play and really who the dominant guys are at the position in the National Football League. So once again, we'll play that for you right here. I want to welcome on Ian Wharton. Ian is a defensive back, specifically a cornerback expert, and he is kind enough to join us here on the Defensive Backs episode of the Packers War Room Podcast. We very much appreciate that. Ian, how's it going?
It's going really well. I really appreciate the opportunity to come on. We were talking right before the show. It's a crazy time of the year, and it's no joke, not only with the rumors going around, but with everyone trying to cram in analysis and kind of study last-second guys that maybe, you know, we're just hearing about now late in the process. But I'm soaking it up, man. This is basically my favorite time of the year. I mean, as much as I love the games going and stuff, I love the draft and the free agency cycle.
Yeah, it's so much fun to just discuss kind of hope. I mean, that's what all this brings. Everybody can win or lose on draft night without a final score, and so it's just about selling hope and about, you know, chasing the dream. And I think that's why everybody loves the offseason so much, and specifically the draft. So Ian, if you don't mind, just kind of explain who you are, how you got your start in the business, and kind of what you bring to the scouting table.
Yeah, sure. So I'm with Bleacher Report on the NFL 1000 crew with Doug Farrar and those guys. And I've been doing that for 2 years. Prior to that, I was covering just general NFL for a year, NFL draft for the year. And usually I'll dip into NFL drafts with beyond the NFL 1000 group too for Bleacher Report. The year before that, where I really got my start, I was actually doing draft and Dolphins writing for some smaller sites, and kind of like the opportunity just came up that the Bleacher Report team needed a Dolphins, not really like a beat guy, but kind of like a team contributor, because we didn't really have like the access that beat reporters do. So it was just kind of right place, right time. I was covering the right team, and you know, their current writer was unable to cover the team for the season. So I kind of lucked into that situation, and that's how I got my start with them, and especially with the draft. That was kind of like my main entryway to Bleacher Report. And it's kind of grown. The company's definitely grown over the last 4 years. And I'll probably be back for next year as well for NFL 1000, which is really, at this point, is a lot more film-based. And then we do a little bit of analysis as far as pen to paper, but it's not quite as heavy as it used to be for me. So we used to do like 5 or 6 articles a week, and opposed to now where it's a lot of film-based stuff. And so it's a lot more entertaining for me. You know, how I kind of got into football is I worked. Obviously, I played up into high school. Wasn't good enough to really go to the next level, unfortunately. But definitely stuck with it. Worked with coaching staffs and colleges that I attended, and that kind of spurred forward kind of like the way I look at the game and a little bit more process over result based analysis, just to kind of differentiate myself a little bit from how others look at the game. I think a lot of people can look at results, and we all kind of look at the same things, but I think if we focus on process, maybe sometimes we can find some more important details of the game that can kind of lead to better results. So that's, I don't know, so far it's been successful. It's definitely not batting 100, but at least I kind of found my own voice by going that direction.
Absolutely. So let's dive straight in to the cornerback class. That is, I would say, right up there in needs for this. Is, of course, a Packers show, but also too, in my opinion, one of the deeper groups in this particular draft. I'm not a huge fan of the offensive tackles, not a huge fan of really the defensive line or the edge rushers, but I like a lot of the corners, and I like a lot of the corners deep into the class. But at the top of the class, there are two guys, and to be frank, the consensus is kind of that there's one guy, and that's Denzel Ward. But my cornerback one is actually Josh Jackson from Iowa, and I think some people maybe get turned off by the 40 time. Some people get turned off by the fact that he played, you know, behind two really good corners at Iowa and didn't really play a ton until his senior year. But I have Jackson just a shade ahead of Ward, and I kind of wonder where you maybe fall in as far as the top two guys in this class.
Yeah, so I don't love the top end talent in this class. For me, it's, you know, I do like Ward, I do like Jackson. Those are my top two guys. If you're breaking them down by scheme, if you're looking at, you know, especially for like the Packers, I would definitely have Jackson ahead of Ward just because of the size that they look for, kind of like the zone ability. Jackson definitely looked a lot more natural in zone than man coverage. I think it'd be a nice compliment too to Kevin King on the other side with his size and with his ability to play the ball. But I like Ward a little bit more in general, partially just because I think he's so explosive, he's so quick, and he's so fluid. We really don't see guys be able to move as well as he does too often. He's smaller, though, and that definitely showed at times. And I think that size does matter a little bit. Like, it's not one of those things that those smaller guys can consistently overcome, like, especially if he's playing in zone and has to battle a tight end on, like, a seam pass. There's going to be a window for the quarterback, whereas Josh Jackson, if he's going to be in the same role and the same function. And every team plays a little bit of man and plays a little bit of zone. It just kind of varies on where you fall in the spectrum. And the Packers were definitely heavier in zone last year. So I mean, that has to be considered. I mean, I don't know if that's going to be the plan again this year under a new DC, but you know, if that's going to be the case, that has to play into any of these evaluations. But you know, Jackson, for him, he doesn't quite have that quickness, doesn't quite have that speed, but he's a very smooth mover and he's very instinctive. Like, I think that the interceptions definitely showed that, but I also think beyond the interceptions, when he's even just targeted, he does a good job of just staying in position, staying in the hip pocket of the receiver, using that length, jumping with great timing without getting too grabby. At least, you know, some of it's an experience with him, which Ward also faces that same issue. It's not like either of these guys were, you know, 3 or 4 year starters. These were basically 1 year guys for their respective schools. So I like Jackson. I definitely think he's a lot less polished in terms of man coverage, in terms of his balance, in terms of changing directions. With he has the natural smoothness, but he doesn't necessarily have the wherewithal right now to really predict routes before they're actually happening. And that's just the mark of a young player. Like, that's not something that's a make or break thing. That, you know, Kevin King definitely struggled with that last year. So, I mean, the Packers saw that. King was a much more extreme example of it. And really, it's uncommon to see someone that raw in the NFL. And even as a rookie, like, he was uncommonly raw. But Jackson's further ahead in his development already than that. So that's the good news. But you definitely see the high-end impact potential with him too. So they're both good, really good prospects. I wouldn't put either of them in like the Marshawn Lattimore category. I think these are more of like, you know, Quincy Wilson types from last year, or maybe like a Trey White, maybe closer to that range, which White had a really good rookie season. But as a prospect, he wasn't quite as strong as Lattimore was.
Yeah, I really like Trey White going into last year as well. Was not surprised that he moved from second-round conversation right to the tail end of round one, especially with the premium put on the cornerback position. And I think you bring up a lot of good points about Ward and Jackson. I think long-term Jackson is going to be the better answer for the Packers. But if you need a guy to play inside, and it's okay if they're a little bit shorter, because you feel like right now, as the roster is currently constructed, with Tremont Williams, Devon House, and Kevin King, you probably feel pretty, not great, but you feel like you have outside corners and are maybe missing the smaller, quicker nickelback type. So either way, you know, I think that they can really improve their secondary. But with that said, I don't see both being available at 14. Probably going to be one or the other. We talked a little bit about the class in general. I think it's very deep. Tell me about some of the guys that you feel like are maybe being undervalued, or just as you've kind of gone through this class and scouted it, people that you would go to bat for, just you're higher on than maybe the consensus or even specific evaluators.
Yeah, so I think that I agree with you. I think the depth of the class is definitely a positive. It's kind of like last year in that regard, where you're going to see potentially like 7, 8 young corners over the first 2 or 3 years really make an impact for their team. It just kind of depends on if they go to the right situation, if they can stay healthy and such. But the talent is definitely impressive, and it's a good time for that type of depth to enter the league. So, you know, kind of getting started, I don't know if these, I wouldn't say necessarily these guys are underrated, but Isaiah Oliver out of Colorado, I think he's a good day two type of value. Holton Hill out of Texas, he's supremely talented. And I actually think he would probably be like the number 2 or 3 corner in this class if it weren't for his severe off-field issues. There's just real concern that he just won't stop smoking pot. And if he does, you know, he's going to be a guy that we're going to look back on. And kind of like Janoris Jenkins, I think, where like Jenkins was a second-round pick in his class because of that. I don't know that Hill goes that high. I think he probably slips a little bit lower than that. But he's a guy that, with his size, his movement ability, like, you just don't see guys. He's kind of like Kevin King in that regard, where it's like he's a physical freak. And you're going to take that physical freakiness just because, like, what that could become is well worth the gamble. But I don't think he showed that he's going to be as trustworthy as maybe teams had hoped entering the process. But you're going to look probably on like round three. I kind of agree with you, the Packers. Like, I think the Packers probably won't really, and I could be wrong on this, maybe if Jackson's there, because Jackson's just such a good fit. But, you know, I don't know that the first round's going to be where they look for an outside corner. It does seem like they've kind of bridged that position for now. So then maybe you're looking at like second, third round, and a guy like Quentin Meeks, a guy who reminds me of Cordrea Tankersley last year for the Dolphins, went in the third round. I thought that was a little bit under where he should have gone. Has all the physical tools that you want. Like, he definitely has the size of the frame. He's like 6'1 and change, 200 pounds. Really good athlete in space, but he's raw. You look at him moving, he's relying on his athleticism. He's kind of relying on the scheme to kind of protect him a little bit. It's an easy scheme transition. I think like the cover four, cover two reliance, that's good. It's easy for the projection, but that's a guy that you probably want to sit a year or maybe rotate in, kind of like how the Ravens did with Marlon Humphrey. Kind of use that physicality to your advantage, but don't over expose him to great route runners. We're just going to win on an island on him because it's just not what he's ready for right now. Another outside guy I'd be looking at again later in the draft, probably Christian Campbell out of Penn State. He's a guy also kind of similar to Meeks, where like physically you're going to kind of want to develop him. He's not a guy who's ready right away, even though he was a senior at Penn State. I really like his ability to play physically at the line and kind of win early, disrupt players at the line. Past that, I think, is where is going to be the struggle, as he's not a guy who really finds the ball extremely well, not a guy who really uses his length as much as he probably could. But those are developmental points that, you know, you're getting into like third, fourth, fifth round type of players that are going to have to, you know, see that type of growth anyways, and you're just, you know, you're going to have to deal with the flaws in the meantime. But if he can become a solid press man, almost like in the sense where like Josh Norman never really improved as that type of player, he's great at the line of scrimmage, but like past that, it's kind of a mixed bag, and you know, you kind of hope that Campbell can maybe develop that type of awareness.
I love that you brought up Quentin Meeks. I just did a film thread on Twitter on him over the noon hour today and got a lot of good feedback on that, but showed kind of his strengths and his flaws, and super physical. I love the way that he tackles, and I really like Meeks as a potential outside target, so I'm glad that we agree on that. How about some guys that are maybe being a little bit overvalued at the cornerback group, guys that you're seeing mocked, ranked on big boards, where you just don't see it?
Yeah, I think I'd start with some people's top corner or number two corner in this class, and that'd be Jair Alexander out of Louisville. I was really surprised to see people love him so much. He's got fine size. If you profile similarly to like a Casey Hayward, it's like the size is fine. It doesn't bother me to be like 5'10 and change, 5'11". It's good enough. He's a little bit bigger than Ward, but he doesn't play as big as Ward. And he's a guy who's I think Twitter tends to like a little bit more than what the league likes, because you're kind of hoping that he becomes more consistent in coverage, and you're banking on the ball skills to make him become an even better player. And that's fine. Like, it's good to bank on ball skills. I'd rather have a guy who can find the ball, but he's a guesser. He's someone that's just out there hunting the ball, whereas he's not having the consistency staying with receivers. I don't think he really played to his combine numbers, where he ran like sub 4.4. He's got it, I think, if he guesses right on the route, but he's not a guy who's really catching up if he loses early. So to me, that says like if he's running against another 4.4 type of runner, he doesn't have that type of speed. Like that type, like if he's running against, you know, even like a obviously like Tyreek Hill, he has no chance, but even just like a guy like Keenan Allen, for example, who's not necessarily a burn, but a guy who has enough speed, he's not even catching up to guys like that. And that was against guys like Syracuse. That was against like mediocre ACC teams. That wasn't even against like high-end talent. So he's not a guy who's consistent right now. He's not a guy who really reads plays extremely well, unless if he can watch the ball. He can track the ball extremely well. But again, I'm not taking that probably into like the late second or third round, whereas I'm seeing him in like the top 15 of mocks. And I'm personally not willing to bank on that type of development. Probably another guy that I'm not really sure of, probably Carlton Davis, I guess, out of Auburn. I think that he's a guy that is very scheme dependent, and that's okay. Like he'll probably go to the perfect scheme fit and make this sound foolish, because that's just the situation once you start to get into like these mid round type of guys, but. Davis is very physical at the line, kind of mentioned like with Meeks, kind of a similar playmaker, doesn't really have the tremendous ball skills, doesn't really have the tremendous ability to recover at his size. He's predictably kind of stiff a little bit, but you can work around that in the scheme of a defense, and like there's going to be limitations like that. Brandon Carr, formerly at Dallas, now at Baltimore, he's made a long career being very similar to Davis, and I think that that's fine. But I don't know that he's a guy that I really am taking in round two, because I don't really know where he goes like up. I think he prototypes as like a good number two corner potentially, and that's okay. But like you mentioned in this class, I just think that there's going to be other guys throughout round two, and maybe you take him like towards like the end of the second round if there's a big run on cornerbacks. But it better be the right scheme fit, because if you're sticking him on in an off zone type of scheme or a man heavy type of scheme where he's going to be on an island, I think you're going to lead yourself to be, you know, get a lot of big plays his way or get a lot of penalties drawn his way. It's not that he's a bad player necessarily, but it's just if you overexpose him, he's definitely vulnerable.
Yeah, I'm not all the way there with you on Jair Alexander, although literally every word out of your mouth just set off like the Demarius Randall alarms in my head when you described Jair Alexander. But I'm totally with you on Carlton Davis. I see some mocks pertaining to Green Bay where it's pass rusher in the first round, whether it be Landry, which I like, Marcus Davenport, which I'm more meh on, but then Carlton Davis being that second round cornerback, and it creeps me out a little bit. I definitely agree with you on that. Next question I want to ask you as we kind of transition over to the safeties, are the two hybrid guys that are pretty much in my top five, and basically everybody's top 10 as far as just prospects for this class, how would you, and I don't, it doesn't matter if this is specific to Pettine's scheme, specific to Green Bay's scheme, but how would you use Minkah Fitzpatrick and Derwin James?
Yeah, I agree with you, like these are really good players. These are two, they're a little bit different in their skill sets and their physical profiles, even in their experience, but they'd kind of be similar players, I think similar roles at the next level. I think you can be a little bit more versatile with Derwin, or I'm sorry, with Minkah. I think you can kind of play him a little bit more as like a true free safety occasionally, whereas Derwin just had no experience or very little exposure to it at a high level. I think Derwin is very easy for me to project. He's kind of like that Cam Chancellor, like that's the big and an easy comparison to make. But he also goes beyond that. I think he's more than just a box hitter. I think he's kind of what Dallas wanted Byron Jones to be, which is a guy who can shut down tight ends. He can occasionally match up against slot receivers. He can be an enforcer in the box. He can be an overhang defender and impact the run game, even if he's not the missile coming down, kind of like a Rashad Jones. Like there's a lot of similar type of players. We've seen guys have a lot of success in the physical role that he has and the physical gifts that he has. Like, he's obviously an amazing athlete. And he kind of came on, I think, towards the end of 2017 to his previous form, which is definitely encouraging to see, like, his huge upside. So I think he's definitely in the – I mean, I don't blame anyone for having him as safety one. I personally would probably have him, like, just barely below Minkah. But it also depends on your team needs, too. Whereas, like, Minkah, I think, can do everything at a high level. I think he's a jack of all trades, but he's an extremely high – functioning player in all of those except for like a true pre-safety, and that is just in the sense of like he's not Malik Hooker, and if you're not Malik Hooker or Earl Thomas, like you're usually not going to be a truly elite like center fielder. He's probably more like a Trey Boston, who's really good in as a center field role, but he's not quite as much of an impact player as those type of guys. So, and I don't really knock him too much for that. Like, that just is what it is. But he does everything else really, really well. A great slot defender, a terrific zone player. He's very rarely out of position. May not have the physical upside as Derwin because he doesn't quite have the same explosiveness. But he's still a guy that, I mean, I'm surprised to see him falling kind of out of the top 10 lately. Like, and I think that's right. I do think that's correct. Like, I don't think he's going to go in the top 8 or 9 picks. He might go 10. Yeah, I think 11, 14, I think that's probably his range right in there. I'd kind of be surprised if he falls beyond that. But he's probably too good to fall too much further.
A lot of the guys I've spoken to, and to be frank, as far as just from a lack of a team need perspective on Green Bay's end, and it just wasn't what my assignment was for our draft guide, the safety class is being talked about as kind of a weaker class. And I just wanted to get your thoughts on the safety class as a whole.
I think I probably agree with that. There are several guys I like, but I don't know that there's I mean, I guess I go both ways. I guess it depends on, like, and we'll see here in, like, a week, like, exactly where these guys are going to go. But, like, outside of day two, like, that day one, day two, like, there's a number of guys I would take, probably, like, seven or eight guys I would take in the first three rounds, maybe up to 10. And that to me means projected future starter, which could be as a third safety, since we're seeing so many three safety sets now, and kind of like hybrid defenders. Outside of that, I don't really care for like the day three depth guys in this class. Like there's probably a couple guys I'd take a flyer on, but I don't really know that it's as strong as like a couple years ago where there were guys on day three that like, you're like, oh, like this guy is, you know, the league is just undervaluing the safety position, and this guy is a true steal, which occasionally happens, and that may happen this year. But, you know, I really like the in general, like the true free safeties in this class, like the guys that you really want as a leader of the back end, guys that you can count on with experience as not necessarily just single high guys, but guys who can be on like the strong side of a play and really be a roamer over the tight end and the X receiver. You know, we know Minka, obviously we just talked about Minka. Other hot names like Justin Reed out of Stanford, Jesse Bates out of Wake Forest, those guys are very, very, very good. Like those guys should definitely be out off the board by the end of round two. I think those guys are easy starters in the first couple years, and probably impact players as somewhat impactful players as rookies. It's hard to be an impactful rookie at safety, so that's kind of relative. But a guy I've liked for several years, Quinn Blanding out of Virginia. He's probably a late second to third round type of value for me. Very consistent performer. Was a former huge recruit, kind of got buried at Virginia in terms of exposure. But I think he's a very consistent performer. Armani Watts, Texas A&M. He's a guy, he's not great at tackling. I think that his weaknesses are very clear. He's not a guy that's going to be in man coverage too often. But he finds the ball. Like he just does an amazing job of forcing turnovers, being around the ball whenever the ball is loose. And I think that there's some value in that. Like I think even if that's like a third round pick, late third round pick, as a special teamer, rotational safety, almost like how the Jets use Terrence Brooks, where he's a part-time player, but he's getting a significant snap load. I think that he can definitely bring value like that. And kind of looking at like the other safety, more traditional strong safety spot, I think this is where the depth kind of dies off a little bit. We know about Derwin, Ronnie Harrison out of Alabama. That's going to be a name that we hear probably in the top 60 picks. Makes sense. He'll be a solid starter. You know, Patrick Chung would probably be a good comparison for him. Can do it all a little bit. Current Patrick Chung can do it all, whereas like early career Patrick Chung was pretty limited. Damon Webb out of Ohio State. I definitely think he's a guy that's been he's gotten a little bit more buzz lately, but he's pretty solid. Kind of like the other safeties like Von Bell, guys like that. I don't know that he'll be a game changer. I think he's just a solid player, a guy that you can count on. Again, kind of like that slot defender type of hybrid role where you can play against the run, you can play against some slot corners. He's not going to be a dynamic player, a true difference maker, but there's still going to be some value, especially on a rookie contract, because you can control that cost.
All right, Ian, thank you so much for coming on the show, man.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Ross. You know, if you definitely want to reconnect before the season and you know, definitely see a little bit clearer of the picture of what the Packers are going to do. And, of course, we get the schedule release coming out. So it's going to be fun, man.
All right, thanks. All right, we want to thank Ian for his time. That was an excellent interview. I hope you guys really enjoyed it. And honestly, I hope you guys pick up a copy of the Cornerbook Handbook. So I didn't introduce him in the general intro, but this is a very special edition of the Packers War Room podcast because returning to the show is our guy, YouTube sensation, Vach Lombardi. Vach, how's it going?
Out on bail, fresh out of jail, California dreaming. What's happening, guys? Thanks for having me back, Doski Woski.
Absolutely. Yeah, Vach is a guy I won't say I discovered him, but it was somebody I was flipping through YouTube last year and got in touch with him, really enjoyed his scouting videos, and those continue on YouTube. And I think, you know, from a year ago, really exponential growth for followers and for just traffic for Vach. So that's awesome to see and definitely a lot of fun to follow along with. So Vach is going to kind of take us through some of the Packers and honestly just some of the draft related conversations that we are we're going to have here tonight. And the first one is a little debate, not even debate, but just a little conversation that Cody and I had on Twitter today. And that is Green Bay's supposed interest in both Derwin James and Minkah Fitzpatrick. Both guys are safeties by trade. Green Bay has, you know, two top 60 picks in HaHa Clinton Dix and Josh Jones that figure to slide in at the safety positions, leaving the spot for Minkah and Derwin to potentially be the slot corner position or the nickelback position. So the question raised was, is nickel or is slot defender worth the 14th overall pick? And Vach, since you are kindly joining us, why don't you fire off and kind of talk about the slot position as you see it?
You know, some people think that nickel corners are just like short guys, so just put them on the inside. It's actually harder to play nickel than it is to play outside. When you're outside, you have the outside, like you have the sideline as a tool, as a helper, you know, as an advantage. That's why they line up to the inside of the receiver to try to, you know, push that leverage to the outside. Or if it's zone coverage, we're pushing you into more help. If you're the nickel guy and you're in man coverage, it could go either way. I can go left, I can go right. We can run motion across the formation. You really have to be on your P's and Q's. You have to be able to flip your hips both directions. You have to be able to tackle in case the run game comes your way. So, you know, nickel corner is not just for short guys. You can be a taller corner and be a better nickel guy. We'll cross that road whenever we get into some of these corners. But, you know, Minkah is, in my opinion, he's a nickel corner that can play free and strong safety. People were projecting him as an outside corner at some point. I didn't too much buy into that narrative. I didn't see it on film. I mean, if I'm a head coach or like somebody's coordinator and Minkah Fitzpatrick is an outstanding outside corner, let's put him in nickel and make a play safety. Now you put that dude at outside corner and you shut guys down and you run free and you be great. I think there was a reason he's playing nickel corner and safety. So, you know, I don't know what's going on there. I need to see more film. Some people say, well, make a play outside corner as a freshman. Why did he stop? Well, you know what I'm saying? All these are valid questions, but I do think he's nickel corner free guy. To where if you look at Derwin, I think he's strong safety, walk down, dime linebacker, you know, chase you, harass you guy. You know, both guys have different values, but they all are flexible within position. So was your question which one I would rather take or who's better or something like that?
The general question was, if you're going to take a guy that you're going to slide in and basically have him be a sub-package player, a nickel player, is that worth the 14th overall pick?
Nah, because your base formation may not be nickel, so nah. I wouldn't do it.
Right, and with Capers, it was 67-68% nickel, but Green Bay's got a new defensive coordinator, so you don't know if he wants five defensive backs on the field at all times, kind of in the same way that Dom Capers did. And I agree with you, Vach, that two-way go is a big deal. You know, when it's a slot receiver, the break can be the outside or inside. Your help is kind of non-existent, depending on what the call is, but you know, if it's cover one or cover zero, the two-way go is devastating, and that's why having a good nickelback is such an important deal. Jacob, what are your thoughts on the subject?
Well, I mean, you know, we're kind of accustomed here in Green Bay to thinking that nickel is essentially your base formation, and you've got a defensive coordinator now in Mike Patton that likes versatile defensive backs, guys he can move all over the place, and reality is, I mean, there's a few teams like the Dallas Cowboys, who I know Botch is a big fan of, but you've got the Cowboys are going to play run heavy, a lot of base, so you'll play more base against teams like that. But for the most part, you're playing a lot of nickel and dime in this modern-day NFL, the spread offense, everything of that sort, to the point where the middle of the field, Mike McCarthy talks about it all the time. He really doesn't make a secret of it, that he wants his offense to have big targets running through the middle of the field. He wants to attack the middle of the field. The middle of the field's open because of the rules, blah, 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 blah. Because of that, the Packers' defense was at its best, at least in my cognizant lifetime, when they had Sam Shields and Tremont Williams on the outside playing cornerback. But their best defensive back was Charles Woodson, and he was a slot corner. Very similar to the role that you could see someone like Derwin James play. Minkah Fitzpatrick could play the same role. I think that if you had asked me this question, you know, 7 to 10 years ago, probably would have said no, that it's a nickel cornerback because that's essentially a backup. But essentially, nowadays, especially in Green Bay and with the spread offense prevalence in the NFL, you're looking at three cornerbacks as your starters, and one of them better be able to play in the slot against guys like Julian Edelman of New England, Danny Amendola when he used to be in New England, Cole Beasley in Dallas, Randall Cobb in Green Bay if you're playing against – I mean, there's just so many good, quick, fast, twitchy slot receivers that you got to be able to play and control that in the middle of the field. Otherwise, teams will be able to just methodically march and nickel and dime you to death down the field. So, yeah, I do think in the modern era, nowadays of the NFL, that a slot player like that could be worth the 14th overall pick.
All right, Cody, split decision so far. What's your take on the issue? I know you're just kind of sort of maybe playing devil's advocate, just sort of trying to generate conversation, but what do you think?
Sure, yeah. And my original thing was, is it a bit redundant to the Josh Jones pick? And kind of what Vach describing Derwin James' game, that is pretty similar, except Josh Jones doesn't have the ability to cover the slot. And we've seen in college that Derwin James can do it. Now, can he cover some of those guys that Jacob just listed off? Probably not, but you know, those are going to be matchup issues that you put your smaller slot corner on. Derwin James is, you know, obviously a great talent, and versatility is usually a good thing. Both Minkah and Derwin obviously have that. It's just, as a Packers fan, we've seen this, you know, story all too familiar, and we hope it's gone away now that Dom Capers is gone, but guys just not being put in their best position to succeed. And, you know, with a guy like, you know, Derwin or Minkah, where you know, you can play him at dime linebacker or deep or in the slot. You know, you're putting a lot on the plate of a rookie to learn several different positions. And I think you saw Josh Jones suffer a little bit from that last year, you know, trying to adapt to playing near the line, playing deep coverage. He was, you know, the game looked too fast for him, and he's one of the most athletic safeties to come out in a long time. So you wonder and you hope that they kind of have a plan in place if they were to take either of those guys. It was mostly devil's advocate because you're right. You're in the slot a ton. You're all, you know, more often than not, the team has going to have three wide receivers on the field. So I mean, a Minkah Fitzpatrick is going to play 70-some% of your snaps. It's worthy of taking a guy like that. And both those guys are great athletes and leaders and great prospects by all accounts. It's just it was more or less to generate conversation. And I think if they became the pick, you know, I'd get on board with it. You know, most of us, you know, we all are kind of leaning towards pass rusher if Landry or Chubb happen to be there. But, you know, I guess I wouldn't have any big major qualms if they took either of those two guys just because they're such great prospects.
Yeah, and I'll kind of cap things off here. I totally agree. I mean, in my opinion, you're in a situation where you've got guys that accomplish two very different things but affect the game incredibly. I think Minkah Fitzpatrick on day one is going to be one of the best 5 or 10 slot corners in the league. A guy that you can play at free as well if you want to use Ha-Ha Clinton Dixon more of a strong safety role, and I think that actually might be his best role. Then you do use Josh Jones as the chase linebacker. I know they've talked about him being a safety only or you know, just saying he's going to be in the safety room, but I really think, you know, with Blake Martinez as kind of your LB1, you can do a lot of different things in that second group. You could play Jake Ryan in the base and then move Josh Jones down when it's time for the other team to throw the ball. But Minkah's going to be that cover guy, play a little free safety, play a little nickel, really do an excellent job for you. Derwin James is just going to be a problem causer, whether he's playing linebacker, like Botch said, blitzing off the nickel. I mean, that's what really gets me excited. I've said a number of times I think Derwin James would be a top 5 or 6 edge rusher in this class. I think he is just that level of blitzer. There have certainly been highlights, but just film inside and out, when you watch, and his hit rate on blitzes is truly exceptional. I think he is one of the better pass-rushing defensive backs that I've seen, and a guy that really I think could just cause all sorts of problems for opposing offense, both defending the run and blitzing, in addition to, I think, being a serviceable slot corner, maybe not in the same vein as Minkah, but definitely a guy I could talk myself into, you know. And then you look at a guy like Quentin Meeks in round 3 and on down the line, at cornerback as maybe an outside prospect to eventually replace Devon and Tremont. So let's get into it, guys. Let's talk about the defensive backs in this class. You can definitely foresee a need at safety and a need at quarterback, and basically just a need to retool the defensive backfield after the losses of Casey Hayward, Micah Hyde, Hocklin. Dix is a potential loss in the next couple of years here, and just in general, with Petten coming in, a guy that really likes to expect a lot out of his defensive backs, a group that needs to be infused with talent. We'll start with the cornerback group and their fit with Green Bay. I don't think the four of us need to really rock through this. The Packers need corners. They need an outside cornerback to eventually take over for Tremont Williams and Devon House to pair with Kevin King. And they literally don't have a nickel they can trust. I mean, I think Quinn Rollins is not the answer there, and they desperately need somebody to play nickel. So they need both types of cornerbacks, and maybe not just one of each either. So let's talk about our top guy. I'll go first. It's Josh Jackson. Josh Jackson may not be the consensus guy, but for me, he is the number one cornerback prospect. I view him as an outside corner. He was excellent in zone off coverage, but showed the ability to play man. At almost 6'1", he has tremendous length, and he's an elite athlete. People are worried about his 40 time. Go back and look at the underlying numbers. Look at his agility numbers. Look at his explosiveness. You can get away with a lot running a 4.52. If you have vertical leap like he does, if you run the three cone like he does, I think he is a potential CB1 on a good in a good secondary. And I think he really does have the chance to be the best corner in this class. Vach, where do you stand as far as who your top corner is in this class?
My top corner, based on ranking as far as being better than everybody else, I have Denzel Ward from Ohio State. Just like he can do everything, man. Man coverage, zone coverage, great hips, great feet, great balance. Back pedal is immaculate, and he likes to tackle, and he likes to get up and talk a little trash in your face. He's small, but he's long, so he plays a little long. He's not the longest guy. That's the other guy that we're going to talk about later. But Denzel Ward is about as safe, as solid as a pick. Now, I don't think he'll be there for Green Bay. You know, now if you're going to ask for a Green Bay guy, I mean, Jair Alexander from Louisville is probably going to be there. Same type of guy. Not as top tier as Denzel Ward, in my opinion, but he's right there. Maybe a lay down and say ouch concern with him, you know, but he's healthy for the most part. Combine check, you know, checked out good. But either one of those guys, you'll be fine with Green Bay at 14.
Yeah, it's certainly interesting. You know, those guys you mentioned and Mike Hughes as well. When Ron Wolf came to town after the Terrell Buckley disaster, he instituted a minimum of 5'10 and 5'8 for their corners. And you're talking about shorter guys that would fit in. Nickel, I think Denzel Ward is tall enough and meets the threshold and can play nickel, could play outside, could play a number of things. But it is interesting that the Packers have at least taken visits with shorter cornerbacks and guys that might slide inside. And like you said, it doesn't have to be a small corner, but those are generally the guys, especially when you've got Kevin King and the other Packers corners that you really want to play outside. The young corner you're going to have nickel duty right away. Jacob, your top corner in this class.
I'm going to echo your sentiments, Ross. We've been talking about it since he beat the hell out of Ohio State. I think that was in November. It's Joshua Jackson. You mentioned all the things about his athleticism. One of the biggest knocks I hear on him is he, quote, didn't look fluid in drills. I don't even know what the hell that means, to be honest with you, because you turn on his tape. I think he's able to play zone coverage, like you mentioned. He's able to show ability in man coverage, and the biggest thing that I really like about him is his hands are always on the ball. He's a playmaker, and that is something that this Packers secondary has sorely lacked. Really, since Sam Shields' retirement, the departure of Charles Woodson, the departure of Tremont Williams, whichever one of those you want to look at, but the Packers just simply haven't had enough playmakers in the secondary, and I think Joshua Jackson is certainly a playmaker, but he's also not boom or bust. Like, say, Demaryius Randall or somebody like that, where if he's not intercepting a pass, he's giving up a 60-yard touchdown. So I like Denzel Ward quite a bit. He's certainly the second cornerback on this list for me, but Josh Jackson's number one, and he has been since November. I've seen nothing since then to change that.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that. You talk about playmakers and guys get their hands on the ball, and definitely, you know, Green Bay's answer for that was Demarius Randle. He was kind of by far their best playmaker, guy with his hand on the ball, but man, you know, he kind of struggled everywhere else, and it seemed like the management couldn't wait to get him out of town, you know, this year. That trade was done well in advance of really the offseason kind of kicking into gear. Cody, who's your top corner in this class?
My top corner is Isaiah Oliver from Colorado. Mm-hmm. I think he offers kind of just checks all the boxes of your prototypical what you want in a corner, and in particular the Packers. You know, 6 foot, really built guy, 200 pounds, ran a 4.5 flat 40. Kind of like Joshua Jackson, he tested really well in all of the agility drills. You know, again, kind of just met all the thresholds, you know, checked all the boxes that you want to see. And then you add in his big hands and 33.5-inch long arms. You turn on this film. Last year, the joke, I remember, Ross, you always making that Kevin King wasn't going to get beat deep at 6'3 and 40-inch vert and all that stuff. Isaiah Oliver is very much the same way. He plays the ball extremely well when it's in the air. I like him at the line of scrimmage. I think he can obviously improve, but he has decent technique as it is now. I don't think his hips are as stiff as people make him out to be. I kind of like what he brings to a team as far as not being on the smaller side, and, you know, just more of the well-roundedness of his game. And don't get twisted, I have respect for all the other top ones you mentioned. In fact, I have three of them in my top 10, and Joshua Jackson rounds out my top 20. So, I mean, four guys really stand out in this class as the upper echelon guys for me.
All right, you just talked about probably the guy who's the answer to this question, but we'll move on from Oliver and talk about kind of your favorite corner. And it might be Oliver, but the guy at cornerback that you're talking about more than other evaluators are.
Well, I don't know if it's more than other evaluators, but when you look at Petten's defense and what he might kind of instill in our guys, what he wants out of his outside corners is guys who are going to be physical at the line of scrimmage. So, you know, Carlton Davis, not many are extremely high on him, but I think if at 45 he's there, he's somebody that the Packers should take a serious look at. And again, I like what he brings as far as, you know, his toughness, his ability to reroute receivers at the line. Now, you know, he has trouble kind of finding the ball in the air and kind of playing that matchup down on jump balls, but, you know, he's a disruptor, and I think, you know, he brings a big physicality about him, and I think that's something that the Packers, again, you know, kind of meets all their thresholds and as far as size-wise goes. Now, he's not the fastest of guys, but again, you know, now that was Richard Sherman, and not to make that comparison, but, you know, guys who can disrupt you at the line of scrimmage do have some success, so I think he's a guy, I guess, I'm a little higher on than most.
Vach, who's your guy at corner? Who are you going to bat for?
Carlton Davis from Auburn. I like my guys to be a little nasty. Can I cuss on here? What's my cuss limitation on here? Can I say the A word?
Yeah, absolutely.
Ass whoop, man. Carlton Davis. Hey, like as far as frustrating people, imposing will, jamming at the line of scrimmage, playing the ball, okay, kind of like Cordray Tangersley was last year. Like, he wasn't the most fastest fluent guy. But as far as if it's man coverage and I'm jamming you, like, it's a wrap. Like, as long as you're in front of me, I can follow you. You know, if he has to play off and track you and use football IQ, you might lose him. But as far as, like, favorite, just fun to watch, like, watch that dude pick on people, take lunch money, strawberry milk, fruit cups, and girlfriends. He takes all that. He's a bully. And I just like that across the board. So, Carlton Davis from Auburn, that's my guy.
Jacob, who's your favorite corner in this class?
Quentin Meeks out of Stanford. He's a man-to-man corner. He can play a little bit of zone. He's a good. You don't really see him. He's a Stanford guy, so I know all the stereotypes that come with that. Smart player, assignment sure, all that stuff. But he really is good with communication. You can see him actually leading some of the communication on coverage checks and stuff like that. And everybody's heard that phrase, communication issues. If you watched a Packers press conference, they've talked about it at length. But I think Meeks is able to play both man and zone, which is certainly something that the Packers could use this year, as well as he played a little bit of nickel. I don't know if that's something that he'll be able to do in the pros, but he's a willing tackler, and he's able to make plays on the ball. So that's something I mentioned earlier. You know, it's not something that I think I want to see from the defensive backs this upcoming season, and that Meeks did really well in college, is there's not a throw that is uncontested. And I mean, everybody knows. You see, it was 3rd and 8, and Dom's got the corners playing 12 yards off the ball. Like, it's an uncontested pitch and catch. Whereas Meeks is right up there on the line of scrimmage. I think they're going to do the same things with Kevin King. But you've got contested throws. And I think, if nothing else, that'll make quarterbacks, receivers, all these great players that the Packers are going to play against, they'll have to earn it. So Meeks is somebody that I would go to bat for. I'd have him. I wouldn't even be disappointed at all if he was picked 45th overall.
That's high praise. Yeah, I've gotten into Meeks lately. Allows a little bit in front of him, and in breaking routes he struggles with a little bit as well. Really wants to open up those hips and kind of play that single high, or you know, the cover three look, and feed the receivers into his inside help. Sometimes he doesn't have that inside help, and that's where you'll see him give up a little bit. Super physical, though, and a great athlete. Another guy who's going to run on the high 4.4s, you know, maybe right at 4.5, but every other number is elite. And he is, you know, we had Math Bomb on just last week, and he's in the nines as far as an athlete is concerned, and that's what you definitely want to see. I like Meeks quite a bit. But the guy that I seem to be higher on than everybody else is MJ Stewart from the University of North Carolina, a guy that is not quite the athlete that Jackson and Meeks are, but is a little on the shorter side. I think you can maybe get him at 76. I have him inside my top 50. A guy that you can play at corner, but definitely can play nickel, and I think could end up being maybe not a Casey Hayward-level nickel, but something in that vein, and a guy that I think is just a really, really good football player and somebody that I want somewhere in my secondary. I would call him, if we're going to call Quentin Meeks a slightly poor man's version of Josh Jackson, I'm going to call MJ Stewart a slightly rich man's version of Micah Hyde. And I mean that in the sense of Micah Hyde, the cornerback, not Micah Hyde, the all-pro free safety. All right, guys, time to get a little bit negative here and talk about bust watch. Vach, what are you looking at as far as this corner class? Some of you just don't see it in. Who's getting too much pub? Who are you worried about in the cornerback group that might bust?
I kind of like all these guys. I'm not really going to say bust, but I think if Josh Jackson ends up in the wrong system, it could be problematic for him. I think he'll fit perfectly in a cover three type of deal, but if you're going to put him in constant man coverage, I don't think that's a great fit for him. So like a cover zero, no help type of look like that'll be problematic. Like I like Josh in the right situation, but that ain't really bust. Like that's just, you know, negligence. But a lot of people like Holden Hill, cornerback from Texas, and he's cool, but I like him better as a strong safety opposed to a corner. I mean, he can cover cool, but I like what he brings as far as covering inside guys and tackling and physicality. So that ain't really busting, but just two things I just wanted to bring to the table there.
Jacob, how about you as far as bust watch on the corner group?
I'm kind of with Vach from the standpoint of there aren't a whole lot of guys that I don't like, but if you want me to pick one, it's kind of cheating, I guess, because is it really a bust if a player's hurt all the time? I don't know what your guys' consideration on that is. But Jair Alexander is a smaller player, and he's a violent, physical player. Typically, those two things do not go hand in hand. There's some wonder with me as well that because of his smaller size, if he's actually better suited to play in a slot. And when you do that, I don't know if he's quick enough in the middle of the field to do that either. So between injury concerns and kind of unsure as to which position it is that he's best suited for, if I had to pick one, it would be him.
Yeah, I don't want to be around Packers Twitter if they end up with Alexander. I mean, I think it'd be a good pick, but the way they complain about injured guys, and frankly, rightfully so, if they take a short corner who gets hurt a lot, Packers Twitter is not going to be a place that I want to be. Cody, bust watch at corner.
I guess I'll go Dante Jackson, LSU. Of course, he ran the 4.3 240, but he is stick thin, and he bites on double moves. He's not, you know, the most disciplined player. And because he's fast, he's going to get drafted high, so expectations will be high. And I don't think he's going to meet those right away. He's going to take some time, one, to bulk up, and two, to you know, learn the nuances of the position even better. Obviously, the athleticism is there. You know, if he wants it, he could probably be very good. But, you know, just as far as being drafted and the expectations, that would be my pick for someone on bust watch.
Yeah, I really like Dante Jackson. I'm with you guys, though. I think this cornerback class is crazy deep. I wouldn't mind the Packers picking up three of them, to be honest, somewhere. You know, they got eight picks in the first five rounds. If three of those eight are defensive backs or even just cornerbacks that you can kind of move around, I'm going to be pretty pleased with that because I really, really like this group. I do agree, though, with Vach, actually. Holton Hill's my bus guy. He's fine. But you still got fans that have this sort of obsession with what they saw from the Seahawks. And so if you're a cornerback and you're taller than 6'2", you should just be a first or second round pick. And that's not reality. In fact, cornerback is an extremely difficult position to play when you're that tall because of all the things you have to do with fluidity in your hips and honestly just having quicks. And it's a... it's something definitely to pay attention to. And Holton Hill, yeah, safety, that's fine. Corner, I don't want anything to do with it unless it's round four or five. Let's move to safety. Maybe not something that you would traditionally think as a need in Green Bay just because, you know, they do have Ha-Ha. Clinton Dix played really well in 2015, pretty well in 2016. And I think, you know, played better in 2017 than people are giving him credit for, but at the same time, he was not great, and he was particularly awful against the Lions in Week 17, left a terrible taste in people's mouth as far as whether or not he is a long-term solution for the Green Bay Packers. But you got Josh Jones. He probably is considered a long-term solution for the Green Bay Packers, but he might play a little bit of linebacker. So do you draft one high? Do you not? I think they need a free safety. I'd like for them to sign Trey Boston and just have him play free safety if he's not going to cost any more than $3 or $4 million. But that is not this discussion. So the top guy for each of you at safety, we can have a little bit of discussion about this, I guess, because of you know, kind of the Minka Derwin. But if you remove that, if you remove those guys, you view them as slot cornerbacks, kind of general disruptors. Jacob, who's your top, like, true safety?
Justin Reed out of Stanford. I mentioned Quentin Meeks earlier as a cornerback I really liked, and something about his tape that also stuck out to me was I kept noticing the safety behind him. I think that he's a rangy player. He has good ball skills. He makes plays on the ball. That's somebody who, if, like you mentioned, if Minka and Derwin James are slot corners or hybrids, or if they have their own separate category, if you want to put it that way, then Justin Reed is my guy that I would have as my top-ranked safety. I really like him. I think that that's somebody who, like someone like the Eagles or somebody like that at the bottom of the first round could pick, and I wouldn't bat an eye. Depending on what some other teams do, I think he's a really good late first to early second round pick, but I really like Justin Reed.
Vach, if we're throwing out Derwin and Minka, who's your top safety in this group?
And that's the thing about it, man. It's not a lot of freeze with range and IQ and reaction. And, you know, so, you know, Justin is one of them and Jesse Bates is the other from Wake Forest. You know, like I said, man, it's not a lot of guys, but Jesse can move. He can cover a little bit of grass. He sees it before it happens. He got a lot of hands on balls, a couple interceptions, you know what I'm saying? So this ain't the class to go get free safeties, even though no class is the class to go get free safeties. So I tend to say, hey, if you can find one with range and IQ and playmaking ability, go ahead and get them. So even though Jesse Bates may be like a second, third round guy, you might want to get him early second, mid second, just to go ahead and get your hands on that guy. Because once the range guys are gone, the range guys are gone. After that, it's a bunch of strongs that can tackle with no range, and I don't like a lot of them, so.
Cody, how about you?
Yeah, you guys picked probably the two best free safety options.
Is it?
Yeah, you know, with Reed and Bates. But, I mean, Ronnie Harrison is another guy I gave a second-round grade to from Alabama. You know, he did play more deep these past years than Minka Fitzpatrick did. You know, you watch Alabama tape, he doesn't exactly pop out a lot. But then you start noticing he's always around the ball. You know, he's constantly, you know, making plays in the open field. He's rarely ever truly out of position, and he can come down and make some plays behind a line of scrimmage, too. He's a guy, again, more of a box-type safety, although he does have experience playing deep, but I wouldn't trust him as a center fielder. Not quite the athlete as a guy you want back there. But, man, yeah, free safeties are hard to come by. That's for dang sure.
They sure are, and Cody, you actually nailed it. That's a little bit of news, too. If you guys are fans of my work on the draft, FanSpeak has actually contacted me and decided to feature my big board over on their mock site. So you guys, and yeah, I'm going to guess it's going to be 99% Packers fans listening to this show. But for any NFL team, you can do up to 7-round mock draft based on my personal top 280, and I just had to double-check to make sure I was right. And, yeah, Ronnie Harrison, if you remove Derwin and Minka, is my top safety in this class, and pretty much, you know, agree with everything that Cody said about him. Those are most of the reasons that I really like him. I trust Alabama safeties, despite what we saw late in the season from HaHa Clinton Dix. I like just the experience that they get in the Saban system, and I do really like Harrison as a player, and I think as a guy that if you do miss out, you know, on a pass rush, you end up with one of those top corners. And if you want HaHa to be a full-time free safety, Ronnie Harrison is an excellent guy to potentially pair with him at strong, although 45 might be a little bit rich for my blood, certainly. And I'm just going to move right into my favorite guy, and a guy that I've been studying a lot lately, despite only really being able to see two games on him, and that is Tarvarius Moore from Southern Miss. Absolutely blew up his pro day, and is a guy really that has elite, elite, elite physical skills. But like Botch said, you have to have the smarts too. You have to be disciplined, and you have to understand what the hell is going on to play free safety. Just because you run a 4.32 and you're 6.1, does not a Pro Bowl safety make. Now, Ted Thompson in his first draft class, he took a corner out of a little-known college, Bethune-Cookman, moved him to safety, and Nick Collins, who was probably on a borderline Hall of Fame trajectory before a neck injury ended his career. I'm not saying Tarvarius Moore is Nick Collins, but the measurables line up, and he's a guy I think could absolutely grow if he gets a good safeties coach. He gets a good position coach, gets in with a good coordinator. I think he's a guy that could grow into a Pro Bowl level safety, and at least right away will give you an absolute missile on special teams. Votch, who's your favorite safety in this class? Somebody you're going to bat for?
Well, if we're not talking about Derwin James, the next best guy for me is Ronnie Harrison. I've really been on the table for these physical, mean, angry, bully type players, you know what I mean? Like Ronnie Harrison, when you see him, he lays some wood. He gets up. He talks to you. He points and laughs. Ha ha! He does that kind of thing, you know. And I really love that kind of football. Now, I don't really want Ronnie Harrison in space. I don't want him deep. I don't want him, you know, diagnosing offense or anything like that. I want to keep guys in front of him. If he has to chase a tight end or something, cool. I want him to blitz. I want him to chase running backs. I want him responsible for, like, small tasks. I don't want you to put the entire field in front of him. But if I can't have Derwin James as an option, I would definitely take Ronnie Harris, put him as strong, and run free.
Cody, your favorite guy in this safety group?
I mean, I'll go Minka Fitzpatrick, Derwin James if I had to choose. Otherwise, I mean, I guess I'll take this opportunity. Marcus Allen for a while stood out to me as a guy in the middle rounds that, again, don't play him in space, but if you want another, you know, thumper kind of big-time safety, sure tackler, I think he's a really good option. Again, more about the strong safeties. Another guy like is Kaiser White from West Virginia. Man, I watched some of his tape, and it kind of looked like Josh Jones, a really violent player that doesn't exactly have ideal athleticism or anything, but a big-time player who did make a lot of time, big plays for you know, crappy Big 12 defenses. But those are two guys I think that you could target in the middle rounds if you want more of a down-by-the-line-of-scrimmage type safety.
Jacob, how are your favorite safety in this group?
Well, I mean, I know people are kind of lumping Derwin and Minka Fitzpatrick together, and that's cool. But if you had to ask me picking between one or the other, I don't know if you're going to do that later or not. But I'll take Derwin James in that regard. But if you want to go somebody other than those two guys, I mentioned Justin Reed, but that's not a guy that I'm going to bat for more than anybody else. So this safety class isn't the greatest one, I don't think. But if you got a middle-round guy, Deshaun Elliott from Texas, he's got – ideal size, at least. He plays coverage. He's willing participant against the run. I think that's a player who you can probably grab in the fourth or fifth round and then coach him up. If nothing else, his size makes him intriguing. You were mentioning special teams for your guy earlier, Ross. So that's something that when you get into those later rounds, that's kind of what you're looking for anyways. They're either preferred free agents you're taking flyers on or guys that you're really hoping are like special teams aces, a la Jeffrey Janis, for example, as a seventh-round pick a few years ago. So If you want a guy in the middle round, I'll take the man from Texas.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the bus watch then as we wrap this baby up. My guy is Kaiser White. Cody mentioned that he really liked him. I got the most feedback, and this isn't necessarily that I think he should be a bad football player, but today when my big board was released and we did some mocks, I got the most feedback on safety on Kaiser White, just people basically telling me there's no way he's going to be around that late. People were mocking him based on where he was in my big board. And if enough people are telling you that he's not going to be around that late, that just means that you're lower on him than just about everybody else. So as far as guys I personally evaluated, you know, I would say the Kaiser White from West Virginia is going to be my guy on bust watch. Watch anybody that you don't particularly like from this class, at least pertaining to where other evaluators have him.
Armani Watts is so terrible, and these damn Texas A&M fans make me sick. They try to sell him as one of these top guys, as one of these, oh, look out for Armani Watts in the first round. Ugh, that dude misses. He's soft sometimes. He's bad in space. He tries to be super physical, risk it all, CTE, schmee-TE guy, but that doesn't work. I'm totally out on Armani Watts. And you know what? Right when he could redeem himself at the Senior Bowl, I was like, let me see what he does at the Senior Bowl. He stinks at the Senior Bowl. I'm completely out on that dude.
Cody, bust watch safety.
As for Cody, it's hard to say guys are going to bust because it's hard to think any of these guys are good. It's only like five guys you can really consider good. So it's not really a bust watch, really.
Watch, you're spot on. I was just trying to think. Sorry, I was on mute there. I was going to say Troy Apke from Penn State, but most people would be like, well, isn't that some kind of sleeper? And, yeah, he's probably going to go on day three, but I think he'll probably go end up higher than he's supposed to go because he's just such a workout warrior, just an insane athlete. But, you know, when watching Penn State games, you rarely heard him come up. So a guy who's just more of an athlete at this point. So I think he might just get overdrafted. But you're right, Bats. This safety class is pretty weak.
All right, well, we want to thank you guys so much for listening to the show. If you haven't already, pick up that Cheesehead TV draft guide. If you like what we do, it's really one of the only things that we charge for it whatsoever. And our compensation to that is honestly, it's directly tied to how many copies of the Cheesehead TV draft guide that we sell. So even if you're a Cowboys fan like Vach or a fan of any other team, A, what the hell are you doing listening this deep into the show? But B, it's a newsstand quality draft guide. It's like your Athlon, it's like your Lindy's, it's like your Sporting News, it's like whatever you'll see at the grocery store that has NFL Draft and Sam Darnold on the cover. It's like that, but it is for you, the Packers fan, and we would certainly appreciate, with time running out as the draft approaches, you guys picking up a copy of that because it would mean a lot to us. Thank you, Vach, for coming on the show yet again and talking some defensive backs. With us, we know it's maybe not the position that you would have liked to break down, but you brought the entertainment. You brought grade A knowledge, as always. Thank you to Cody for coming on. Thank you for Jake for coming on. And as always, go Pack, go.